Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, it's time for another episode of Stunt Tracks with the Leslie Hoffman, yours truly, Uncle Jim, and Admiral Ken. How's everybody doing tonight? What's happening, Ken? Ken, how you doing?
Oh, we're here. I'm okay.
Well, that's good. We got to make sure you're okay there. So, and how about Leslie Hoffman? How you doing, Leslie?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
It's not snowing down here in Rutland. In fact, it's really hot. We actually have the AC on. How's it up there in Saranac Lake?
Actually, I was going to say the same thing. It's actually been very hot today.
And you know what? That makes perfect sense because this weekend is Trek Conderoga. And every year that I go up there, dressed as a Klingon, I sweat like a dog in a Chinese restaurant because it's so hot in that school. But it'll be fun. It will be fun. Yeah. So we have an interesting show planned for you guys tonight. We thought that seeing how Leslie actually was an alien on Deep Space Nine. In fact, I believe she's been more than one. But we figured since aliens Leslie's been an alien, we thought we'd talk about aliens, particularly from Deep Space Nine. And we have quite a few to get to. And Leslie's going to share some stories about, you know, becoming an alien, how you act like an alien, who's responsible for making people into aliens, because there's a lot more to it than just slap on some ears. And Leslie will share all of her vast knowledge with us, and under her expert guidance and tutelage, maybe we can learn a thing or two about aliens on Deep Space Nine. So if you're listening to the sound of my voice right now, live on Blog Talk Radio, that means it's Tuesday night. That means it's 7:00 Eastern Standard Time. That means if you call 646-668-2433, you can talk to either Leslie, myself, or Ken. We'll be here for another hour. That's 8:00 Eastern Standard Time. And if you're listening on any other platform and it's not Tuesday night and you want to ask a question, that's fine too, because you can always go to the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization Facebook page and ask Leslie any questions you'd like to ask her right there. Leslie's pretty good at that. She usually gets back to you relatively quick. And if you have an idea for a show, something you'd like to hear Leslie and myself and Ken talk about on a future Stunt Trek, please go over there to the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization Facebook page and make your suggestion. We haven't heard one yet that we didn't like. In fact, most of the suggestions that we get, we actually put into operation and they end up becoming topics on future shows. So please head on over there and make a suggestion if you have one. Also, if you'd like to get an autographed picture from Leslie, you can do that there as well. Just shoot her a message, and she'll fix you right up. So, anyways, 646-668-2433. 877-344-3333 is the phone number. The lines are currently open. We would love to hear from you. So, Leslie, why don't we dive right into this hole? Let's just take this giant ball of snakes and pull them out straight here. Let's talk about the most obvious one. And, of course, that's Cardassians, because I happen to know for a fact that you stunt doubled Mila, and you actually got killed when the Cardassians threw a grenade in the basement and you got blown down the stairs. So I know that you actually were a Cardassian on Deep Space Nine. So what was involved in turning the Leslie Hoffman into Mila?
Well, in that case, I think the Cardassian probably is the most extensive and probably expensive makeup that they did, because there was actually 9 separate pieces that they glued to you, one for each side of the neck. That's 2. Then each side had, I think, an eye piece, and then there's a nose piece. And anyways, it came out to 9 different pieces that they had to glue to you. So, and we've talked about that, you arrive at the studio and you go to your dressing room and you put on this t-shirt, and then you go to hair and get your hair pinned up, and then you go to makeup and they put on, they glue the pieces onto you and put the makeup on, and then you go back to the hair trailer and you get the wig put on, and then you go to the dressing room, back to your dressing room, and, put on the costume. But
so
that one had the most pieces. I would say, unless there was a very rare guest star, I would say most of the aliens were maybe 3 pieces at the most. Oh, and then the other thing that I wanted to say, well, I'll put it all together, is that, because we're also talking about costumes, is that male Cardassians tended to be military. So, all the males tended to have the military ones, except that there's always an exception to the rule, like Garak, who really wasn't military. So he was dressed in his own costume befitting the tailor on Deep Space Nine. Now, the other thing is the female Cardassian, what we call the spoon on the forehead, was blue. It had a blue. I never knew if that was makeup or if technically female Cardassians are born with that blue spot. But the Cardassian Bajoran, Zael, she didn't have the blue spot. I mean, she had the Bajoran nose. She had the mixed features, but she didn't have the blue spoon.
And, Leslie, how long, when you showed up to work to be Mila, for instance, how long you'd show up and you'd go away? You go to the makeup trailer first, and how long would you be in the makeup chair getting all those 9 pieces put on you?
Oh, Cardassian could be 2 to 3 hours. And like you say, and that's not including going from one trailer to the other to the other. I mean, just the makeup area was 2 plus hours, and then getting the wig on could be another half hour, 45 minutes. I mean, it takes a long time to get into the makeup.
Now, when you're spending all this time in the makeup chair and the wig chair and the costume trailer, I guess you call it, the prop master,
well, the costume
I guess it would
was
be.
In, was it, the costume was in my dressing room. There's no costume trailer, you know, per actor, stunt person. Just makeup trailer and a hair trailer, hair department and makeup department.
Well, I mean, somebody had to have the costume made for you, though, right? It had to come from somewhere.
Right. The costume department would usually, or hopefully, it was there before you arrived. I mean, you know, you would find out where your trailer was, and you would go to your trailer, and, well, some people had these things. The trailers were called teardrop trailers, and that's exactly what they looked like. They sort of looked like a teardrop on the side. There was a, whatever you want to call it, a bench, bed, whatever. That's what you sat on. There was a mirror, and there was a closet. You know, so you'd go into your trailer and you'd open up the closet and you would hope that your costume was there. I mean, there were a couple times that the costume wasn't there. And then you hope by the time you got back from hair and makeup that the costumer, you know, or the costume department had dropped off the costumes to the various people that were working that day.
And hopefully there's somebody there to help you and to put the costume on correctly, because what if it's some alien costume that no one's ever seen? You have to know how to, the proper way to put it on, so you don't put it on backwards or upside down or inside out or something like that, right?
That's an interesting thought, but no, there was no, if you were doing a play, you would call that person a dresser. But no, there was not a dresser per person to make sure you were in the costume correctly.
Now, that's strange.
I mean, I don't know if that's... I'm sorry?
I think that's kind of weird if you think about it, because let's say that you were going to be a Klingon, and let's say that we're talking Klingons in Star Trek The Motion Picture, and this is before... Everybody knows what a Klingon looks like, is familiar with what a Klingon looks like. And you walk into your trailer, and there's all this armor laid out to put on as a Klingon. And, of course, no one's ever seen a Klingon before. So how do you know what armor to put on first, what goes where, what side the sash goes on, what side the knife goes on, all that kind of stuff, if no one's there to tell you?
Well, sometimes there would be an extra day that you would go in for a fitting because everybody's not built the same. And if the costume department has to make a costume for you, they need to take your measurements, or they might have your measurements on file and just make a costume hoping that you haven't gained weight, lost weight. But you know, you came in several days before for a costume fitting. So, you know, you probably had an idea of how the costume was going to fit. I mean, think about, you know, like if a guy's going to buy a jacket or a woman has, boy, I feel like I'm talking about really old days. You know, you want a dress and you know, the tailor with their white chalk thing would make marks on the, okay, we got to pull in the sleeve here, or shorten the sleeve, or do this to the lapel, or for a woman, you know, we need to bring in the waist or something like that. So to go in for a fitting, like I say, you would, the basic costume was probably already built. But then, you know, they would have to tailor it to have it fit you. So again, more than likely, you had worn the costume or you had the costume on before the day of work, and therefore you wouldn't put it on backwards or something. Or let's put it this way: is that, I mean, let's say someone did put it on backwards before they got on the set and they started filming. You know, the costume department would check you out and if they saw something wrong, they would correct it before you got filmed. That reminds me of, I was watching an episode, I mean, this is years ago, I was watching an episode of Bionic Woman, and this was the strangest thing, is she was supposed to be a nun, and, you know, the white piece goes inside with the dark cowl, whatever you want to call it, on the outside. But there's a scene where the stunt double is running and the black is on the inside and the white is on the outside. So that was the fault of you know, the person that should have been doing continuity and the costume department. I mean, that was pure craziness. But I guess it was too late to go back and film and correct that. But boy, you will see that in movies. I mean, where you're saying, aren't they trying to make sure, you know, this is this way, this is that way, and you know, like I say, sometimes you might see, well, again, not Star Trek, because like the combads badges. Were Velcroed onto you, so it wasn't like you could put the badge in the wrong place. You had to put it where the Velcro piece was. But again, I'm talking about old movies or something. You might see a pin on a woman kind of move around her body or something.
Now, Leslie, if they have to measure you and make a costume specifically for you, do you get to keep those costumes when you're done? Like, you are not?
Oh, absolutely not. No, it was really sad when Voyager was finishing up. I really wanted to get my Torres Starfleet uniform, and I went to the costume department and asked if I could have it or if I could buy it No, it is the property of the studio. But then they had that big auction where they cleaned out all of the Star Trek uniforms. They gave them over to a company called It's a Wrap, who put it on eBay. And I didn't know they had done that until like about, I think, almost 6 weeks into it. And I was just lucky that I got my Mila outfit and my Torres repelling outfit. But, you know, had I known 6 weeks earlier, maybe I could have gotten the Torres outfit, the Starfleet one.
Well, the reason why I asked is because when I saw you at the last convention, I saw those costumes that were there, and I was just curious as to, did they give them to you or how you actually got them? But now we know.
No, I had to bid for them on eBay just like everybody else.
Now, see,
a first choice or anything like that. They just took all the Star Trek costumes and, like I say, gave them to this company, which was in charge of listing them on eBay.
Now, see, that just shouldn't happen. The Leslie Hoffman should have first dibs on her costumes. Come on. So, Ken, you've been awful quiet. Did you want to have any questions for Leslie about becoming a Cardassian on Deep Space Nine?
Not so much a question, but she can confirm an observation that was said at the time. But allegedly, the Ferengi head, when they first designed it, didn't have any venting. And literally, the actors were almost passing out because they had no the sets were hot and they had no place for the heat to go. And after a period of time, they eventually wound up venting the Ferengi heads so that they would be able to get some air circulation in there. Was that an accurate assessment of what was going on, or?
That happened with a bunch of aliens, especially the Jem'Hadars. Same thing. It was such an enclosed headpiece that the stuntmen were passing out. I mean, or Dennis, who was the stunt coordinator, he used to take a knife and split the top of the head, and he would take a bottle of water and pour it through the split just to cool down his head. I mean, sometimes the costumes and the headpieces are designed for the look and not designed for the comfort of the actor or the ability for a stunt person to do a stunt fight. I mean, these costumes can just really cause a lot of problems. Like I say, I remember there was an episode on Deep Space Nine where there was a bunch of Klingons, and I don't know, they love using smoke on the stage because I don't know if it kind of softens where you think you'd want a really sharp picture, they would rather have this kind of blur picture. And there were, you know, I feel like they needed at least 10 or more Klingons, which is actually unusual. Dennis was lucky to get, you know, 3 stuntmen. But so he had to hire guys that weren't used to the costume. And they're on this soundstage that's filled with this smoke. And, I mean, one guy ran out the door and threw up, and another guy was passing out. And, you know, the ones that were used to being Klingons were uncomfortable, but they were okay. But, I mean, it can be very difficult in some of these costumes. But I want to go back to the friend.
Even in the regular uniforms, I mean, or the regular uniforms, the regular costumes, I mean, as you pointed out, they weren't really designed for comfort. So, I mean, you probably literally would almost sweat through your costume every day.
Oh yeah, well, like you know, let me finish with the Ferengi, and then I want to jump to Mila. Is the story that I heard was, if you remember, most of the Ferengis had that piece of cloth that went behind the back of their head.
Yes.
Well, those pieces of cloth were stapled into place, and one day they stapled Armin, and he said, "That's it, I'm done. You know, I will not wear that cloth." So if you watch Deep Space Nine, you will never see Armin as a Ferengi with that piece of cloth on the back of his head. You'll see Rom and Nog and, you know, those people. But Armin just said, "That's it." Then as for Mila, like I say, costumes. Mila's costume, a majority of the top of that costume is neoprene. And neoprene is what scuba divers wear. That's what you use in a wetsuit.
Well, yeah.
If you're wearing a wetsuit on a soundstage with stage lights on you, you're going to sweat. I mean, again, it it can be very uncomfortable. The Klingon suits, the Jem'Hadar suits, I mean, they were so thick and heavy. I mean, you're carrying this extra weight, plus your body can't breathe. How do you say that it's fun? It's fun being an alien, but it also was a big pain to be an alien.
Yeah, and I can attest to that, dressing up as a Klingon myself. But I love it, though. It's so much fun waving your batlet around at people and stuff like that. I'll be doing it this weekend. I'm looking forward to it. But, Leslie, how about some of the other aliens? Like, how about Bajorans and Vulcans, for instance? Or Trill?
Well, Bajorans was actually the easiest alien because all it was the crinkled little nose. There was no other piece that was glued onto you. We talked about this in another podcast, is that, you know, Kira was in sort of a cat suit. I mean, which, I never stunt doubled her, but you know, when you're in the tight suit and you're trying to do kicks or punches or whatever, and the suit doesn't allow you to even raise your arms, again, it constricts you. And which, now I'll go back to why I wanted Torres's Starfleet suit, was they actually put, it's called gossets. It's like this diamond shape that goes underneath, about where your armpits are. Because, you know, Torres had to fight, and yet I couldn't raise my arms over my head or straight ahead of me or something. You know, the suit was way too tight. And
funny.
So as opposed to repairing the suit over and over again, because I'm ripping out the bottoms of the arms, like I say, they put these gossets in place to give me an extra, you know, couple of inches to be able to move my arms around.
Wow, that's wow.
Yeah.
Now, there were a couple of other aliens that we saw on Deep Space Nine, like Jem'Hadar. Did you ever get to be a Jem'Hadar?
Jem'Hadars are all males, so the answer is no. And they were tall. They tended to be. That's another thing is that. I'm going off track here. Is that on Voyager, they had the villains, the Herosians, and originally the Herosians were supposed to be like 7 feet tall, you know, or taller, and there just aren't that many actors, and there definitely aren't that many stunt people that were that tall. So Herosians, you know, like in the first episode, you see these really tall guys, but the next couple of episodes that they might feature a Herosian is they got shorter. And actually, there's an episode, I don't know its name, going back to Deep Space Nine, they really wanted the Klingons to be tall as well. Actually, like I say, the Klingons, the Jem'Hadar, they wanted them to be tall, but there's one episode, I feel like he was a basketball player or something like that. I mean, so there, and the Klingons were in jail, that's about all I remember. So you have this one Klingon that's like 7 foot something, then you have a Klingon that's like maybe six something. And then you have Dennis Matalone, who's like, I don't know, 5'9", 5'11". I mean, he looked like a baby Klingon next to these other two guys.
Now, Leslie, how about the Vorta?
The Vorta, you know, the thing is that some of these, or a lot of these, I didn't get to be one, but I was on the set with them. I'm not sure if the Vorta had two pieces to make up, or, well, if they had one piece per ear, or if the ear or the side of the head was possibly two pieces. But their costumes were a lot lighter because they weren't warriors. They were more like the supervisors. So you know, the costume, like I say, the costume, I guess, didn't have to look like it was ready to go into a battle to protect you. So the Vorta wasn't, from what I remember, the Vorta wasn't that bad of a costume.
No, and what's his face there? Was it Jeffrey Combs who played a Vorta? And he also played Shran. Well, am I thinking the right guy?
I believe so. He kept getting killed and he kept coming back, didn't he?
Yeah, he played like five or six different characters.
Yeah. I worked with him on the set where there was that temple where we went up to Griffith Park. But again, you know, you work with somebody, that doesn't mean that you talked with them that day. You know, we were all there, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you all sit down to lunch or
Right, exactly. Hey Ken, did you have any questions for Leslie about the Vorta or the Jemadar or anything before we move on a little bit?
No, I'm just pretty well just kind of like piggybacking tonight.
If kind I think of something along. Like a twig caught in the shoulder at a mighty river of life.
Yes.
Right?
Like end through the hourglass. So are the days of our lives.
Exactly. So how about the changelings, like Odo? That must have been a complicated makeup. It looks pretty simple, but I have a feeling that there's a little more involved to it than that.
Yeah, no, that, from what I understand, and I think you've seen pictures on YouTube or pictures of where he's taking the mask off. I mean, that seemed like it was a whole front mask glued to his face. Like I say, I know I've seen videos where he just grabs each side of the face and he just starts pulling it, you know, to the right and the left and just ripping it off his face. But a lot of times, well, like Michael Dorn or other, they were so used to knowing that they were going to be in the makeup chair for so long, they could take naps. I mean, they just sit down and pass out and let the makeup department do whatever they had to do.
That's funny. Michael Dorn snoring away.
Yeah, I guess. Well, I guess if you do it for 7 years or whatever, or Michael Dorn was more than 7 years because of Next Generation. I mean, I guess when I was in the chair, I was always curious to watch them, you know, put on the makeup or do the hair or something. So I was always awake and looking at what was happening. But like you say, I guess if you've done it every day for 7 years or more, it's like it might have been exciting the first couple of seasons, but after that you just fall asleep in the chair.
Also they got better at putting the time for each of the makeup pieces got faster because the more that they did it, because they could, you know, I mean, when you first started with the makeup, you're very, very careful. But if you're doing it for like 10 years, you get to a point where you pretty well could speed it up. So they probably had less time in the chair as the years went on.
You know, it really depends on the makeup person. I told you the story about, like I said, we keep saying this is going to be about Deep Space Nine, but then I have to jump over to Voyager. Is that, you know, when the forehead piece was being put on me as Torres, you were supposed to kind of, I'll call it spot weld. Spot weld was like glue. Is that you would put dots on the outside of that piece and glue it to my head. But one day they had a brand new makeup person. Maybe it was because there were too many people, too many aliens working that day. So they had to hire on extra makeup people who weren't used to Star Trek makeup. And this makeup person just smears the glue all across my forehead. I mean, it took them well over an hour to get this piece off of my forehead because of what this makeup person did.
Wow.
I mean, usually they could probably remove it in about 15, 20 minutes normally, but that's what I'm saying is that you just kind of tack weld it to the forehead.
So removing it,
you just have to take those pieces, you know, do the solvent on those little spots. But when you smear the glue completely across the forehead, boy, you're stuck. I mean, because they want to try to save these pieces so they can use them again. And
to reuse these pieces over and over again for the most part?
I heard what you said is that they would use the pieces over and over again until they were just torn up or not savable.
So you didn't get new pieces every time you get made up?
Oh, no. But then I wouldn't know a new piece from an old piece. I mean, they really clean them, so it isn't like I come in two episodes later and there's already makeup on the prosthetic. The prosthetic, you know, is a certain color, but when they take it off and they clean it, it goes back to the original color. You know, there's no grease paint makeup on it. So I wouldn't know necessarily a new piece from an old piece, but no, they definitely reused, especially ears, like Vulcan ears and things like that, Romulan ears, they would reuse them.
Now, Leslie, you did get a hand-me-down wig, though, for B'Elanna Torres, I remember you saying, right?
Oops, say that again?
I remember you saying on another show that when they got a new wig for B'Elanna Torres, you got the hand-me-down wig from the previous season.
Oh, yeah. That again, you got to realize this is a money-run show. Well, all shows are money-run. And they're not going to spend bunches of money if they can save it. So Torres's wig cost about $4,000. So each season, why they would get her a new wig, I don't know if that was part of the contract or why they got a new wig each season. She would get a new wig, and I would get the old wig. But I was wearing, it's still a $4,000 wig I was wearing.
You didn't happen to get one of those off eBay when you bought this stuff that they got rid of, did you?
You know, I don't think the wigs went to It's a Wrap. And as for wigs, I have a feeling Paramount kept them because, you know, they could comb them, they could cut them, they could, you know, they could use it on a completely different show.
Yeah, that's true. You could see someone else wearing B'Elanna's hair. It was just your basic hair.
I mean, yeah. All you'd have to do is either... I mean, there was one season where her hair seemed to be very wavy, but you could still... I mean, it's a wig. You could straighten out the waves and you know, make it a hair... Well, like I say, it's a wig. You could pin it up. You could do anything you want with the wig. So I don't think they sold the wigs per se. One thing I wanted to bring up, which I thought was kind of funny, kind of interesting, but and it has to do with the costumes, is that no matter what woman you were assigned an underwire bra. I mean, you had to have yourself sticking out. While in the case of men, had to wear I don't know the term, but it's what dancers wear, so you don't see their private parts. They look like Ken dolls.
Like Odo. Just like Odo.
Right. Well, again, now I'm jumping over to Voyagers. That, I mean, one of my favorite stories was it was the episode where O'Brien... Wait a minute. No, that is Deep Space Nine. It's the episode where O'Brien was put in jail, but it was like being put in jail in his mind for like 30 years or something like that.
Does that sound familiar?
Yep. Okay. So there were these guards that, you know, threw him out of jail. You know, they're saying, your time's up. We're throwing you out of jail. Well, Dennis had hired two stuntmen to be the guards, but for some reason, instead of being able to film it all in one day, it took 2 days. And the other stuntman, well, the one stuntman could come back the second day, but the other stuntman had already committed to a job. And the one thing that you do as a stunt person is you don't, if you've committed to a job, you don't turn down that the other job, even if it pays better, because that does not go over well in the stunt community. Anyway, so this guy had actually committed to another job the next day. So there was a young stunt man on the set, and Dennis said, if you fit into the costume, you know, I'll hire you for tomorrow. So, well, you know, now we go back to fittings. This guy was larger than the original stunt guard. So he comes out in the costume. He sort of fits into the costume, but he comes out in the costume, and you can obviously see that the pants are really tight on him. The costumer says to him, aliens do not have genitals. I guess he hasn't been there, D. I mean, I guess it's like stun eggs, you know. It's like, where'd that come from? Aliens do not have genitals.
Well, that's not entirely true, because in Star Trek VI, Marty tells Kirk to kick the guy in the knees, and then tells Kirk that not all aliens keep their genitals in the same place. So.
Okay. You got to realize how different television shows are from the movies. I mean, a really sad statement about this is they felt Dennis could be a stunt coordinator for the television episodes, but they never hired Dennis Matalone for a movie. Even though he was the coordinator of Next Generation, they did not hire him for the Next Generation movie.
Oh, I have ask you a quick question that doesn't have to do with aliens, so I'm going to break off a little bit here. But when you're watching Deep Space Nine, and the scene that in my head right now is the Way of the Warrior, when all the Klingons beam over and they're fighting in Deep Space Nine, and Odo's shooting them, and they're having a big battle, and they're waving their batlets around and whatnot. So what is the difference between hiring a stunt Klingon versus a extra Klingon, like a Klingon that's going to stand there and shoot his disruptor pistol, versus a Klingon that's going to get shot and fall off the promenade, for instance? Are all those Klingons stuntmen, or are there stand or extra Klingons? I guess.
I feel like in that episode it was all stunt Klingons. You kind of answered your own question. Is that if the Klingon is going to get shot and fall, then you have to have a stuntman. If the Klingon is just standing there behind General Martok and not speaking, then you could use an extra to be a Klingon.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
Which actually kind of segues into, and I hope I'm saying the name, Lauren? What was Lauren? How do you pronounce that name? I mean, I have Lurian.
Yeah.
Is what Lauren was.
Yeah.
Okay. Mark Alan Shepard, I turned it around, Mark Shepard Allen, whichever way it is, he was like the guy that was at the, remember the show Friends? And there was the guy at the coffee shop?
Yep.
That guy was an extra. But they liked him so much that they kept him on Friends for all those years. Well, that happened to Mark, too. Mark was a background performer or an extra, but they just thought the costume was so great and him sitting at the bar that he got to work for 7 years straight. But they only paid him as an extra. Before the series ended, there actually was an episode where they featured Morn. But the Screen Actors Guild has a rule that if you upgrade an extra to an actor and then use them more, you have to pay them as an actor. Well, they didn't want to do that. So they worked it out with Mark that he was able to do the, I'll call it, featured episode, but only being paid as an extra. And then the very last episode of the series, where Morn was in it, they did pay him as an actor, but they did not pay him as an actor in that one episode that he was featured in.
Wow, that's weird, actually, if you think about it, because Morn was always there. He was always around.
Right, but I can't think of the guy's name, but same thing about Friends. You know, every time they were in that coffee place, they finally gave, now that actually ended up a little different because actually that extra was upgraded to an actor because he did say lines. Example is Nurse Kelly on MASH. She was an extra and they just liked Nurse Kelly for some reason, or they, you know, she obviously was this outstanding presence that they kept her on, and then they started giving her dialogue. So she went from being an extra to an actor.
Now, is there any, like how many episodes do you have to appear in? Like, can Morn be in every single episode every week and still be an extra, even though he's there in every
Absolutely.
Episode?
Absolutely. Another person, that you've seen on Facebook is Bill Blair, is that Mark was the same extra or the same character, but Bill Blair, he's a tall, slender guy, and they would keep calling him back in week after week to be a background alien extra.
And what does an extra just gets doesn't make as much as a regular actor? Or, well, obviously, but I mean like a
Not even close. I don't remember the difference of the pay scale, but let's say where an extra gets maybe 150 or whatever, we were getting like $600. I mean, major difference.
Wow, that is a big
difference.
And
where we were getting dressing rooms, extras were put on a sound stage in a kind of grouped area. I mean, they were supposed to sit all together and not move until, you know, someone said, okay, I need you, come with me. I mean, so it's a very, it's a caste system. I mean, where the actors had, I mean, the starring actors had 40-foot trailers. The stunt people had the teardrop trailers, you know, these little mini trailers. The extras didn't even have a trailer.
No, they just had a room.
Like I say, they didn't even have a room per se. They were, like, if we were filming, I'm trying to think which... You know, let's say we were filming on the stage that had the promenade. There were two stages. Well, actually, there were three stages that were right together. But let's say we were filming on the promenade. They might have the extras on the sound stage next to it, and that's where and there used to be a row of makeup tables. I mean, they still had makeup put on them by, you know, they didn't make themselves up but like I say, they were just grouped together.
Wow. So, Ken, did you want to ask Leslie anything before we start to wrap up here? Any questions?
No. Like I said, I'm just sort of hanging out.
So I would be an extra. I would just to be on Star Trek would be an honor to me. I just to be there would be awesome, you know, I think. Just to see it, just to be a part of it.
Several podcasts ago we did have Jim Lowe on with Cynthia, where Cynthia, these two people were from Northern New York. Jim has moved to Massachusetts since then. But Cynthia actually wrote to a talk show that got filmed at Paramount. And it must have been, you know, some number anniversary of Star Trek. And I guess the talk show, because it was at Paramount, loved the letter, brought the two out from New York. And then as a surprise or a feature, they allowed them to be extras on an episode. I think I'm not sure if it was the episode, might have been called 1, 2, 3 or something. It was where somebody was, like, killing all these people, you know, you're next. But they were in a crowd scene. So we had, like I say, two local people that came out to California and got to be an extra for the day, but they weren't paid. Now that's the interesting part. So they got to be on the show, but they didn't receive any pay for being on the show.
Yeah, because isn't it true, like everything else, you have to be on, there's actually a Screen Extras Guild.
Guild doesn't exist anymore. When Star Trek was around, Screen Extras Guild had folded. It went bankrupt. So the extras got absorbed into the Screen Actors Guild. But like I say, there's different pay scales, you know, for an extra as opposed to a stunt person, as opposed to, well, an actor has an agent who will negotiate hopefully a higher price for them.
Well, Leslie, Believe it or not, we've already burned through an hour. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I can't. We didn't even get into trills and so this is something that, you know, I was saying to you was that if anyone on 10 Ford or the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation page wants to name an alien, we could do part two next week.
Yeah, because we still have aliens to talk about that appeared on Voyager as well, another show that you were on. So, yeah, we could definitely carry over and
right.
do Voyager aliens next week. So, anyways, make sure you guys go to the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization Facebook page, say hello, you know, make a suggestion, ask Leslie for an autograph, whatever. Just go there and say hello. We love to hear from you guys. And make sure you tune in Thursday night for Trek Talking and Beyond. We have a really great show. We're going to talk about the new Star Trek Remnants VR experience game at Dave and Buster's, which I had the opportunity to play over the weekend, and I'm going to tell you what I thought about the game and if I think it's something you might like. And we're going to talk about a little bit about the temporal Cold War on Star Trek Enterprise and how that might affect the events of Discovery Season 3 and maybe Star Trek Picard. You'll have to tune in to find out. So we're also going to do our Star Trek birthdays as usual, numbers around the globe. And we're just going to hang out and have a little bit of Trek talking like we do every week. So you want to check that out. We're also going to be doing Comic Corner on the 9th of next month. We're going to have two books to talk about. So you want to tune in for that. And please stop into our Star Trek Facebook page, Trek Talking and Beyond. I have several polls that are going on right now where you can, you know, you can vote whether you like each Star Trek series or don't like it. And we're going to go over the results for that on our following show, which will be the following Thursday. So we've got a lot going on. And please head on over to patreon.com/trektalkin and see if there's something there that fits into your schedule that you're comfortable with, and think about helping us out, because it's so much more than just a podcast. It's blog talk radio. And that means that our studio line, 646-668-2433, that costs us money to keep that line open so that you guys have a line of communication directly with us. And that makes this podcast unique from other podcasts, and the fact that we're just not talking here. You can call and talk to Leslie. You can call and talk to me. You can call and talk to Ken or any of our other guests. But that doesn't come for free. So we do ask for some help if you can. And you can go over there and pick a tier that you're comfortable with and join our Star Trek family. We would love to have you. So, Leslie, that's it. We're out of time. Can you believe it?
That really flew by today.
The time flies when you're having fun.
Oh, yeah. No, it's always great talking to you. And like I say, it's reminiscing for me. So it's very enjoyable.
And I think she's yelling in my ear telling me we've got to cut it off. I think it's great, too, because a lot of fans, you never really get to talk to people that have been on the show and get the inside story and the behind the scenes from a person that's actually been involved. So I think it's great. And it's also nice to have Ken back with us, too. So that's cool. Ken, I used to be Ken's co-host on Ken's show. So it's nice to have Ken back. Welcome back, Ken.
Yeah, like I said, it's good. It's good. I was talking with, because I actually went back to work just to do a visit today because I had to be in Albany. But yeah, it's good to, you know, be back in the swing of things, and it's good now to have the time to be able to do these sort of things.
And we always keep the chair warm for you, Ken. Don't you ever worry about that. And
yep.
On that note, it's time to say goodnight, everybody, but don't worry. Admiral Ken, Uncle Jim, and the Leslie Hoffman will be back next Tuesday, same bat time, same bat channel. We'll be doing Voyager Aliens, so make sure you tune in and make sure you visit the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization Facebook page, and it was great hanging out with you guys. Be good to each other, and we'll see you all next week. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Night.
The Let's see what's out there. Engage.